Let's go around the NFL in the loop style.
Why are you smiling?
Because I love football.
Brought to you by Quick Assist. Here's John Lopez and Reggie Adetula.
I'm going to tell you all about how much fun you're going to have this season.
On Houston's sports leader, Sports Radio 610.
Yeah, man, it's a football Friday here on Sports Radio 610. It's in the loop. John Lopez, I'm Reginald Atula, and we got Byron Matthews sitting in for our guy Figgy Fig, moving into his first house. In fact, that inspired our question of the day, where we asked, what are the worst days of adulthood? Moving clearly being one of those, but you guys kept him coming from the 281, realizing you didn't save enough for retirement. Oh, I can only imagine.
That's everybody, isn't it?
I can only imagine, because you got to look up and be like, damn, I've been doing, where, why?
Yeah, where'd all that money go?
So there's
Where'd all my money go?
Somebody said that having to buy $500 worth of groceries. Yeah. And that seems to happen every time, too. Just like every time you pop in. Like, how
you're buying an appliance, man.
Yeah. Except it's not. It's like bananas. And you're not even going to eat all of them. Right? You're going to throw half of those away when nobody eats them. And then this one really hit me as well. Someone said, I know a lot of, and this is Michael on the YouTube. I know not a lot of people can relate, but the first time adult hit me was when I was in the military, finding out I was going to have to go to war. Yeah, that's tough. So salute to all the people that have done that on our behalf, because not everybody has to, not everybody goes.
Yeah.
The people that do, we appreciate them. And first time your kid gets really sick, I'm sure. Yeah.
That's a good one. You don't know what to do. You do everything.
Right. You're just like, anything and everything that I can do to help this kid be all right. You do. All right, let's go around the NFL now, which is brought to you by Quick Assist, your no-hassle solution to reselling your tickets across every marketplace. Download Quick Assist from your app store today. That's Quick Assist. Quick Assist, your ticket everywhere. All right, we begin with some news that I bring just to make my co-host happy.
You're darn right.
Malik Nabers.
He's already in the lineup.
Wide receiver.
I put him in the lineup last night.
Wide receiver for the New York Giants, and also the...
It's the Bandidos.
The Bandidos.
Yeah.
A fantasy team that nobody cares about except for John Lopez.
I think everybody cares about it.
I've done the research. But yeah, Malik Nabers cleared off the concussion protocol to play versus the Eagles after missing 2 weeks on a concussion protocol, as I said. Obviously, there was a little bit of conversation about this before because he was seen out at a concert and people had consternation. But here he goes, returning to football. And the reason why this caught my eye was one, because, again, I wanted to make sure that you were happy with your fantasy team, that you were ready.
Thank you.
But also, yeah, absolutely. we all we need. But also, concussion protocol, that immediately brought to mind for me Henry Toto.
Yes.
And that is a man that is in concussion protocol. And obviously, we have not seen him practice. That's 2 weeks for him, for Malik Nabers. Does that feel like that's a, and I know you've already said that it's rare that you get a guy that goes into concussion protocol and then plays the next week.
Mm-hmm.
Does it feel like he's going to miss 2 weeks, that this might be some level of indication of what we might be in store for?
I mean,
with Henry?
I think off the top of my head, the concussions that we've seen players go into protocol, it's been 2 or 3 weeks. So it almost, not to cop out, but it's almost like, I don't know, you know, because it depends on just how.
What, Dr. John P. Lopez?
I don't know this
Come on
one.
Now.
But it's gonna be at least, you know, until next week. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that, as I've said, because it's never really in 1 week that you get back. But to extend it another week, I would be a little surprised if they extended another week based on what we saw, but that's it. Just on based on what we saw.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Shout out to fantasy teams that own, that have Malik Nabers on their team.
Mm-hmm.
You can go ahead and make sure to slide him into the starting position.
Yes, sir.
So that he goes and handles business. But, yeah, also, I kind of just, again, brought me back to the injury list that the Texans have had.
Mm-hmm.
And Henry Toto has been very great in at least stopping the run, getting the field, those types of things. So you might have to play a little bit further without him. But, of course, there's a lot of belief in Neville Hewitt and Jake Hansen and what they're capable of doing. And that's definitely going to be a space that we're watching. I'm watching. Come Sunday.
Well, and I think the bigger thing for me with those two guys playing is not that they can't tackle. Neville Hewitt came in and really did a hell of a job off the bench cold, but it's tight ends. It's tight ends coverage for some of these backup linebackers that are in there now.
All right, so we continue around the NFL, and we go to Cleveland, except not Cleveland. We go to Brook Park, where that is where the Cleveland Browns will be playing football. In the future, they are planning on moving, the Cleveland Browns are, from the city of Cleveland itself out to a suburb of Brook Park, Ohio. Cleveland Mayor Justin Bibb announced yesterday in a press conference that They will construct a domed stadium. So they move from the outdoor stadium mm-hmm. to an indoor stadium in the suburb of 18,000 people.
How about
that? Located in close proximity to Cleveland. And I have a homegirl that she's from Cleveland. She got a text from a friend that was like, "Oh, they moving to Brook Park, and we're out now on the Cleveland Browns." And I was like, "That's what did it." That's what did it. But yeah, it's interesting because this trend of sorts. It feels like there's more of a trend of teams trying to move their stadiums back into cities mm-hmm. in some ways. But at the same time, you see other teams that are in some ways also trying to move out into, I guess.
But they don't seem to work as well, do they?
Intercities are out.
In the suburbs.
Yeah.
I don't think they work as well in the suburbs. Now, the Cowboys are an outlier because that's just a metroplex and, you know, everybody goes and all that. But a lot of these like, you know, San Francisco moved to, where is it?
Santa Clara.
Santa Clara. It doesn't feel right. It, you know, they're obviously very good and they get fans and all that. But in terms of like what it does for the city, it just doesn't feel right. Especially Cleveland. Like, it seems like Cleveland needs to be in Cleveland.
Right.
Yeah.
Especially when you have, you know, it allows you to have places to be, which made it interesting, mm-hmm. the cost of this. You mentioned this.
Felt a little low.
So ultimately, what, 2.4?
Yeah, 2.4 billion.
Billion with a B. Mm-hmm. I said that's real vocabulary. 2.4. That's $2.4 billion.
Yeah.
But that they will use to build the stadium. We were comparing it to the last couple stadiums mm-hmm. built. SoFi Stadium was like $5 billion.
Yeah.
However, Allegiant Stadium was $1.9 billion, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And the distinction between those two was, I recall, SoFi Stadium, they built a lot around it.
Mm-hmm.
I know the NFL headquarters had their building built, and I don't know if that was accounted within this, but I would imagine so.
Yeah.
Compared to Allegiant Stadium, where they built the stadium,
mm-hmm.
but they weren't building like a surrounding district, which seems to be the new trend when you're building a stadium, is that the stadium is not just built as an event center, which they really are, you know, because obviously you use the football portion of this for, what, 8 weeks a season, maybe some more if you have postseason. Those other times, now you need to make sure that you use this and get, you know, event money and drive that in. But also, it's real estate development.
That's all it is.
Having storefronts around.
No, that's absolutely
around, having
what
restaurants
it is.
Around and, you know, being able to obviously charge that rent, but then continue to drive business to that area.
But it also just, it sort of just disconnects you a lot to what you really are. Like, imagine the Texans moving, you know, to the Woodlands or Kingwood or something like that, which is kind of what Brook Park is. It'd be good for them, and it'd be cheaper to build, I'm guessing, because they'd get every break they could possibly get, you know, up in Montgomery County or whatever. But it just doesn't. It kind of just doesn't sit right, and I'm not so sure long term it's going to be the best, you know, the best for the Browns.
Yeah, and I mean, look, I already have a little bit of anecdotal evidence, and of course, I don't know that you can scale it necessarily, mm-hmm. but it seems like the people in Cleveland don't really love that feeling of moving out of kind of more of the city center out to the suburbs. But Cleveland Browns will be doing it. Good luck on that,
mm-hmm.
And good luck on this for the Pittsburgh Steelers, as we know that Russell Wilson will be the starter. But there's a little bit of a, you know, consternation about it. Now, we know mm-hmm. that in media spaces, people have talked about how this doesn't, you know, they've had their opinions one way or the other. I know that Terry Bradshaw said that he would have stuck with Justin Fields in this course of this. Supposedly, according to Albert Breer, there's a lot of players that that maybe don't want Russell Wilson
mm-hmm.
to start over Justin Fields. And so all the noise outside, that can only means, but that only means but so much. I find it interesting that if there is some level, and of course, if the reporting is true, because mm-hmm. I don't know exactly what level of you know, importance to put on that, but if that is true, in your locker room, if you have some level of dissension there, is that not an issue?
Absolutely it is. And I feel kind of bad that I went down this road, but it's what I felt at the time. I thought Mike Tomlin handled the transition and how he's going to do it perfectly from the podium. But you tend to forget. And by the way, Justin Fields handled it like a champ.
Yes.
Like an absolute champ.
Yeah,
like, I needed to be better. I didn't play as well as I should have.
Yeah, the quote was, I don't think I played good enough if I'm being real with you.
Yeah.
If I'm being real with myself, I think if I played well enough, I don't think there would be any sort of who should be playing, who should not discussion.
So they both handled it well publicly, but that's publicly. You know, that locker room is picking sides. And I forgot to kind of take that into account. Doesn't matter what industry you're in, whether it's the NFL or the radio industry or whatever industry you're in, you know, when big changes like that happened at the top, and this is about as high to upper management as you can get in an NFL organization, the quarterback, people pick sides. And that leads to maybe dissension is a little bit too long, but a split, you know, a rift is the right word, you know, of how this is going to play out. I think this is a game that all of a sudden became something I want to watch. Now, maybe it's hate watching or curiosity or whatever. But
to, oh yeah, it's definitely Hayward.
Yeah, just to see how Russell Wilson plays.
Yeah, that's going to be another on a very good week of games already. We'll talk more about that as well, especially once we draft the weekend at 140. But yeah, this is a schedule that delivers in a lot of ways, and that just adds to a game that maybe you would not have been all that interested in when it comes to Jets Steelers. But there's a lot of storylines in there. What does Davante Adams look like with that team? And then, of course,
that too.
Does Russell Wilson look like he can do it at a certain level, even a level better than what it seemed like he was doing in Denver in his previous stop? So that's all going to be there on Sunday Night Football. And I'm sure NBC is very grateful for that, because otherwise, if it wasn't for these particular storylines,
I wouldn't have watched or just checked in.
That game was not very much interesting
outside
of those things. We talked about Thursday Night Football. Obviously, the Broncos get a victory in New Orleans, where Sean Payton returns to his old stomping grounds. 33-10 was the victory. We talked a little bit about the victors. Actually, we talked a little bit about the losers in this when it comes to the Saints. But I also want to talk about the fact that folks were looking at them as, hey, Dennis Allen, are you about to be out of a job? Because I know Richard Sherman on Thursday Night Football on Amazon Prime, that broadcast, flatly called out the Saints for not playing and not playing to a certain level, like basically not giving effort. And if it brings up the Q word, are they quitting on that dude?
That's the worst thing that you can say. And that's a it's basically a ticket out of town for the head coach. When it starts circulating, they quit. He's lost the locker room is another way they tend to put these things. When you hear they quit, business decisions, when you hear that, when you hear he's lost the locker room, you've got 1 foot out of the door. You already have 1 foot out the door. And Dennis, I mean, he wasn't already on strong ground as it was.
Yeah. I think at one point in talking about this game, you said, where do they go from here? There's nowhere to go from here. Like when it comes to just like the way that they play.
Yeah. Over the cap this year, already over the cap next year, and long-term contracts to key pieces that are only getting older.
Now, I always point this out because it fascinates me with the Saints. They've been in situations like this seemingly
for like
a decade. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
It sounds like, no, they can't be. They just constantly are. They are eels. They keep sliding away from the grasp of the salary cap. I don't know how it happens, but I don't know if they'll be actually like good enough to compete in some way, but they're not going to be bad. I just believe it because they constantly keep doing this. All right, one more thing before we move on from around the NFL. Mekhi Becton, you familiar with him, the tackle that used to play with the Jets, now with the Philadelphia Eagles. He is returning to his old stomping grounds because the Eagles are going to MetLife Stadium to play against the Giants. And he gave a blunt assessment of his return. He said this, quote, "I don't want to play in that Essie Stadium." You know what S is. It's bad. Everything is just bad about that stadium. I don't really like it. I'm glad I only got to do it one time a year. Just got to go in there, do my 1-11 and go home. Go 1-11 and go home.
And by the way, another stadium that's not in New York.
Well, I mean, that one's kind of unique. Where are you planning on them putting a stadium
in the
city?
Yankee Stadium's in there. We'll figure
We're talking about different things in that instance.
It's not a great place. You've been there, haven't you?
MetLife? I have not.
It's hard to get to.
They've had a lot of injuries turf.
Yeah, they have. And that's another part of it. The curse of Jimmy Hoffa. But either way, no, I don't disagree with him. It's not a great place to go watch a game.
I don't know if love is the right word that's used here, but I'm always tickled by like people that are willing to say it very plainly in that way.
He's like,
look, man, I'm just clocking in at work over there at MetLife.
Yeah.
I'm just going to get in and get out. I just want to go home. So shout out to Mekhi Becton giving us that reel. It feels like so many people are media trained and give us coach speak or player speak. He's like, nah, I don't like it.
No, that place sucks.
And that's around the NFL here in the loop on Sports Radio 610 on a football Friday. We're getting ready for Texans-Packers that happens this weekend. And to do more in getting us ready, let's hear from the coordinators. Of course, Bobby Slowick, Matt Burke, and Frank Ross all talked yesterday. Let's hear from them, including Matt Burke's assessment of what Danico Autry will bring to this team. We'll talk about that and much more next on In the Loop.
Here's In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Adetula.
That's right. John Lopez, Reggie Adetula. We got Byron Matthews holding it down on the ones and twos for you on this Football Friday In the Loop. It's Friday, which means yesterday was Thursday, if I have my days right. Is that how that works?
Last time I checked, yeah.
Okay, very good. Yeah. Very good. Just want to make sure. Never want to be wrong. And on Thursdays, the coordinators speak to the assembled media, and that's always very interesting to get us a little bit of insight into maybe not the game plan. I don't think they're giving that out, but a little bit of the perspective.
Well, that'd be fun, though.
That would be helpful, though. That'd make me, my life a lot easier when it comes to what they're looking for going into the weekend of football, particularly this weekend up at Lambeau Field versus the Packers. This is a tight one. Packers are slight favorites. If you trust Vegas in the way that they feel. So this is going to be real interesting. In fact, we have NFL Network on here in the studio, and I looked up at one point, and on the NFL Network, they were like, who are the non-superstars that maybe have an opportunity to have a big day this weekend? And someone said Romeo Doubs, and I was like, bleep you, dude. And so with that being the case, I will ask you, though, as we go into this, it does feel like the matchup when it comes to, like, squad versus squad, or I guess what's the right way of saying, like, side of the ball versus side of the ball.
Yeah.
That is more interesting to me personally is Packers offense versus Texans defense, right?
Yeah, yes, but I mean, there's some really interesting things the other way as well. But yeah, I would have to side with you. Packers offense and how this depleted, very depleted, 5-6 starters from last week could miss is going to match up with them.
Yeah, and so within that, one of the things that obviously we've been tracking all week, and especially because we've been counting down all season to this, Danico mm-hmm. Autry's return. Matt Berg, defense coordinator of the Texans, and a dude who has not given enough notice. The word escaped me as soon as he's not given enough love is what I wanted to get to ultimately in this. He talks about what Danico Autry adds to this defense.
I would say he's tough. Toughness, first and foremost. I would say he's a very unique rusher, just as a sort of, not really, I want to say hybrid, but as a big end and an inside rusher. I mean, he's had success at both spots. So it's, he just offers some different pitches in terms of when he rushes inside, he rushes like an end inside, which is hard sometimes for guards. A lot of times offensive linemen interior there's not a lot of space. It's close quarters combat when you're rushing inside, right? And so sometimes there's not a lot of room for moves or things. You got to be a little bit more direct. Somehow he's able to create some space and rush. Like when you're rushing on the edge and you have sort of a little bit more area to like build momentum and put a move on and stuff because you're operating in a wider space. He kind of brings that ability inside, which is kind of hard sometimes. It's pretty unique for him. So he can rush on the edge, he can rush inside. And I think he's just because he's kind of like a in between type of end tackle, he kind of brings a little different style of rush to the front.
Probably the most in-depth answer he gave.
I thought that was super intriguing.
Yeah.
And it gave me a little bit more solace. Not that I didn't know Danico Autry can clearly rush from the interior. Mm-hmm. It's the reason why you go get him.
Exactly.
But hearing the ways in which it troubles a guard and the ways in which knowing this that this game, you're going to need to get after that quarterback, Jordan Love. Like, yeah. Especially knowing the...
Especially from the inside.
The ways that you've been a little depleted on the back end.
Yeah.
And we talked to our guy, Andy Kalu, about this mm-hmm. yesterday. It might behoove you more to try and focus on getting pressure on him and stopping the pass game there as opposed to thinking, we're just going to cover it up on the back end and be fine.
Right. I am a little... I don't know if worried is the right word. Apprehensive about him coming back. Because he's a... They love him, first of all. I mean, from D'Amico, Nick, Junkyard Dog, obviously Matt Burke just going on.
Will Anderson Jr.
Will Anderson Jr.
When he was brought up, we played that audio.
They love him, and he's a badass. He really is. I think that's the word that Nick actually used, too, when he was talking about him. He is a bad, bad dude. My worry or apprehension is... I sure hope a lot of people, I know they're probably not, but I sure hope a lot of people aren't thinking he's going to be some magic bullet. You know, like he's just going to, like all these places on the defense where you're depleted that, oh, well, don't worry about it. We got Danico Autry back. That's a big ask for a guy. I keep wondering about how many snaps he's going to take, you know, the inside versus the outside.
Correct.
He talked
yeah.
about that. He's going to have an impact, but boy, you know, it's like, is he going to be able to, you know, be a difference maker for four quarters? I'm a little apprehensive about
yeah.
that, because as good as he is.
To what degree, ultimately?
Yeah.
I think he is definitely a positive in what you're doing.
You'd be insane
to say that it's not.
Mm-hmm.
But, what degree, and then what does that then balance out with some of the other things? One of the things coming into this game with the Packers defensively as well is that this Packers team uses a lot of play action.
Mm-hmm.
And this Texans team, it's one of the places that they actually have a little bit of weakness, especially with the linebackers, as they really try and come up and make sure that they stop the run. Matt Burke was asked what makes the Packers play action so dangerous.
I would say going a little bit back to like they structure everything during the week, right? So A, their run game marries very well with their pass game and their play action game. So they're giving you the same looks. So it's like run. Then all of a sudden you step up and there's space behind you. And then the quarterback's talented. He's got a good arm. He's not afraid to like put the ball down the field. Like sometimes like people don't want to do all that stuff or hold on to it and all those sort of things. So I think like he's willing to take some of those shots and put the ball up there and trust his receivers, the cadre of receivers to go make plays. So I think there's an element of trust and belief in the system and just launching it. So, I mean, there's going to be balls going down the field. I don't think they shy away from that. And really going back to the basis of it, like the structure of their motions and shifts and pre-snap stuff that puts you on edge and just try to put you at disadvantageous positions before the snap. You know, so now you're worried about, I'm shifting, I'm moving, am I bumping? Oh, ball snapped. Is it run? Now it's a pass. Like, that's how they try to marry their whole thing up. So trying to keep our guys' eyes in the right places and keep sort of a calm mind about us will be, like, part of, like, defeating all that because they try to put you at unease before the snap even happens, you know what I mean? And then that gets you in like, oh, I'm stepping up and try to create that space behind you. So there's probably a few different factors there.
First of all, I'm really happy that he could flex that Bridgeton Academy and Boston College education.
Yes.
Bridgeton Academy High School.
We need to start calling him Matthew.
Probably where you learn cadre of weapons. But, okay, so that's a long way of saying what you just heard from Matt Burke. They're good at the play action because they're good at the run. Like you can set things up as he talked about, you know, balance and all that, but it doesn't work as much unless you're good at running the ball.
I think honestly, for me, the part that I took away was just, hey, you know, they are going to be deceptive. Mm-hmm. They're going to make you question your eyes in some ways and pull you this way and push you that way when it comes to like, you know, deception. And I think the best offenses in this league are capable of putting you on your heels, knocking you off balance, and then taking advantage because, as he highlighted, Jordan Love is not one to shy away from throwing the football. He got a little gunslinger in him.
Yeah.
And that obviously can be good in that he'll put it up there and maybe you'll have opportunities to turn the football over. But if they are utilizing in play action and they draw you forward and they draw you out and you give him an even bigger window to throw into, that's when it gets dangerous. So big play potential is one of the things that I'm interested in this game versus the Packers.
I think it's going to spell the difference. I think there's going to be a lot of them. I think there's going to be a lot of big plays on both sides of the ball.
Speaking of both sides of the ball, I kind of want to get some Bobby Slowick in here and talk about the offense as well, because this Packers defense, one of the big thing that comes up immediately is what?
Well, obviously, you know, they're going to be able to stop you in the pass. I mean, the turnovers, secondary,
being able to
Jair Alexander, we know about that. But they're going to be able to defend the pass, but they're also a little bit susceptible to yards per catch. So they rely on the turnovers.
Yeah, and so Bobby Slowick was asked, what about the Packers secondary creates problems for quarterbacks?
Yeah, they fly around. You know, they know what they're doing. They're on the details of their defense. I think Halfley does a really good job, you know, as far as schematically putting them in the right spots and letting them go cut it loose and play what they see. When they get there, they make the play almost every time. You know, like every mistake against this defense is costly. And that's in the pass and the run game. You get loose with the ball in the run game, they make you pay. And there's been a number of fumbles that have been on the ground this year also. So that's really big for us. Just our emphasis this whole week has been protect the ball and how intentional we have to be in doing that and how the scout team has to give us great looks at making sure that we do that in this game, because that's going to be a huge factor.
They've created 17 turnovers through their six games, which is by far the most in the NFL.
Right.
Like by far the most.
Yeah, and I think that this makes it very interesting. You mentioned the idea of a shootout type game. CJ Stroud, it's going to be even more incumbent upon him, and we know he's capable of handling this, but be really clean while you're also being aggressive in the course of this. Like that is a tough needle to thread, but I think that's ultimately going to be his task on Sunday.
And we, you know, CJ spoke this week as well, and he actually said, you know, talking about facing the defense, you know, got to be more disciplined, more, and I'm paraphrasing, but more disciplined, more in control with the risks he's going to take, etc. I get it, and I know he has to be smart, but I kind of want to see him take those chances as well, because I think that's how you're going to be able to exploit their defense.
Yeah, and that, again, calls in a highlight the Stephon Diggs of this all.
Like, yes.
These guys, they have some guys that can really show up. I know that Keyshawn Nixon is one of those outside wide receiver cornerbacks that has been very good in the course of this, but I don't know that they have anybody individually. If you start ending up in kind of one-on-one matchup type situations, that is going to...
That's what I'm saying. Maybe take those shots.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think it's going to be incumbent on, I think, CJ to probably, like, hey, just trust your guys in some of these circumstances. And then your guys got to come up for you. And Stephon, you know, he will can take continue to come on and look a little bit more like what you saw last year. And then Dalton Schultz being more consistent in that. I think that'll be really big for this
Do
team.
Something, Dalton Schultz. It's going to be big on him.
That's passing-wise. Running-wise, Bobby Sloak was actually talking about the idea of carrying Mixon's production versus the Packers, or rather versus the Patriots, into this game.
Yeah, it's always, anytime you get a good player back, you know, it's always helpful for sure. I would say he made some really good plays in that game and would love to see that continue every game if we could. But the other thing that really jumped off in the last game was we really blocked well up front. You know, we had great intent. We were on the details of what we had to do. We were moving people that we needed to move. And that's New England's historically a very tough scheme. And our guys up front did a really good job to give Joe and Damian some daylight.
Yeah, I thought this was really interesting because I'm trying to make sure that I'm always as fair as possible as we always are. Dalton Schultz gotten a lot of heat, mm-hmm. but in seeing some of these, like especially the big plays, Dalton Schultz, in addition to everybody, has for the most part done a really good job, you know, getting some of those blocks and mm-hmm. allowing those big plays. And I think those are going to be that's the necessary part, right? I think it's a lot easier to at least see if you could find some explosives in the run game than. Hey, we're going to the offense gets to the place where it overhauls and you're knocking down 4 or 5 yards every time.
Right.
And obviously you would like to do both of those things, but I think the big thing is making sure that you have those explosive plays, those 3-4 plays like you had with Mixon and Damian Pierce this past week mm-hmm. that can at least buoy you offensively and again hurt a defense. You clearly want to get to a place where you're doing that consistently, but if you can give me some of those explosives in the same way, I think I'll be happy.
Yeah, and speaking of which, you know, D'Amico mentioned that earlier in this week about the tight ends blocking on those big two big runs, wide receivers blocking on the two big runs. But really, it comes back to what he just said there. They had a good game blocking. It's not a coincidence. They played better because of Joe Mixon, and Joe Mixon played better because they were better. You know, and so that's what it's going to come
down. And Damian Pierce.
And like, Damian Pierce.
Can't forget him in the course of this. But it's funny, in talking about, like, the explosive play, Josh Jacobs is kind of that guy. Looking at their rush offense, the Packers, they are like their success rate isn't great. Meaning, like on any given down, mm-hmm. if they're running the football, it's not like they're more often than not going to be like this is a run that gets us a successful result that puts us in a significantly better place. It's more run, kind of tough sledding, and then boom, there's popping explosives. And he does that at a pretty high rate. And so it almost is an interesting kind of juxtaposition where mm-hmm. now the Texas defense are going to have to try and limit those types of big pops from Josh Jacobs. If you take your good angles, if you have good eyes and you're able to limit that, mm-hmm. the effect of their run game is going
to
be significant.
And then
less.
Kind of to put a bow on it, that's why the play action is so scary. Because, you know, they're really good at it. Because even just that half step from Neville Hewitt, if he starts, or Jake Hansen, if he starts, which it looks like they both will, even just that half step committing to the run and trying to stop that run is what's going to open it up more for Jordan Love.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I really love these guys that we get to hear from them mm-hmm. Thursdays. And, of course, we get to really revisit it on Friday because it illuminates what's happening in these games. And this is one that's just going to be very, very mm-hmm. intriguing this weekend. Noon against the Packers, and that's going to be heard right here on Sports Radio 610. 9 a.m. is when pregame starts. You'll want to be here because Sean and Seth will get you all the way ready for this football game. Appreciate you hanging out here with us in the loop on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's get into what's popping where Figgy was right. with is this possible rumor going to tell us a little bit something about the juice box? We'll do that next.
The biggest stories in sports and entertainment. Sports Radio 610 style. In the Loop presents What's Poppin'.
Let's get into What's Poppin' here in the Loop Sports Radio 610 so I can stop talking about what I was talking about prior or else I'll be mad on air. Who would want to do that? Shout out to utility companies. All right. One of the things that's popping is that Friday practice is happening for your Houston Texans as they gear up for their trip to Lambeau Field to Green Bay, Wisconsin. And with that being the case, Friday gives us our last chance to kind of get a feel for who is working, who is not working, and maybe, just maybe, who will be available for your Texans. And so,
give me a sign.
All right, so you want to start? Well, I'm not going to give you the option. The maybe less good signs is the way I'll say it. Mm-hmm. Azeez Alshire and Henry Toto not practicing.
All right, so there you go. We just talked about it.
It looks like Neville Hewitt and Jake Hansen.
Yes, sir.
Which, you know, I'm okay with that. You know, veteran guys.
Had to get okay with that this week?
You've had to. Yeah, you kind of had to talk yourself into it.
With all due respect, clearly.
I mean, I came in Monday and I was like, hey, man, one of my passing thoughts was like, this Neville Hewitt, he just stepped in and made a bunch of tackles.
No, for sure.
You know,
100%.
I just go back to the coverage, you know, with the play action, what we talked about like last year, which wasn't necessarily a great strength already with Toa and Alshire, but I feel like they've played better to it. Alshire in particular was pretty good in coverage in a couple of games. So that's what would worry me about that.
Kamari Lassiter and Jimmy Ward also not practicing. So, again, they missed the entire week. That seems very evident that now you're going to have D'Angelo Ross and Eric Murray playing, starting, in fact, for you. And so those guys will have to step up. However, a good thing to hear at practice, Foley Fatukasi, Fola Runshaw Fatukasi.
That's pretty big, man.
Practicing on a Friday,
yeah.
You have to imagine that gives him a very good chance at least of playing come Sunday. Now I know we've seen some times where maybe a player comes back on a Friday and doesn't play.
What's up, Joe Mixon?
Yeah, you got to hope that means that you have Foley as a defensive tackle who has been pretty damn good for you this year to help keep a little bit more consistency if possible on that defensive line.
Well, what it does is that interior of the defense, as I've been talking about this week, gets a big boost, but it's also a very big boost for Danico Autry, because Fatukasi, you know, can kind of do a lot of the dirty work in there, which he always does, and then Danico Autry can be in there and maybe even be a little better against the pass if lanes open up. So, and we heard Matt Burke talking about that.
That's
you
right.
know, so helps there, but boy, look at the defense that's not going to be there. With Alshire and Toa and obviously
Lassiter,
Ward. That's big time. And we've had our worries about Eric Murray even when he was just stepping in, you know, so.
Yeah, this is going to be a great game to prove, to silence all worries and anxieties against the Packers. All right, some other things that are popping. We came on these airways yesterday and we were like, what in the hell are the Astros trying to tease?
Mm-hmm.
They had a very quick 8-second promo that was voiced by the Houston rap legend Scarface himself. And it was like you could see kind of that brick red Astro script that we're used to seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about the ink and these types of things. And you're like, man, what is happening?
Is this a Bregman thing? Why are you doing it to these people?
Like, it doesn't make sense. Yeah. You can't sign the free agent until 5 days after the World Series. So that doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense as like a future jersey, like all city, City Connect uniform, because they don't release those for the next year like this. So what was it? Ultimately, we found out and that Figgy was right. Figgy hypothesized that it was maybe one of those kind of like special releases that the Astros have been fond of doing with some local, you know, local legends of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
And it is that. Of course, Scarface celebrating 30 years of greatness. And so he has a special Astros cap, 30th anniversary cap, which is now available in the center field team store. At the ballpark, and I got to admit, like it's black with the kind of red Astro logo,
the old brick logo.
Yeah, exactly, in the brick red. And I was I don't know if amazed. I understand that not a lot of people love that that time period in the brand identity of the Astros. For some reason, I love it.
It's all right. I wouldn't necessarily put it in my top, but I'm not like anti. Like, it was fine as far as I was concerned. I do like the way that he's doing it is actually a better look than back in the day.
Well, yeah, I think that's a fair way of putting it.
Yeah.
Okay, so it doesn't mean anything about Bregman. City Connect uniforms, we have no idea. It's just, if you want to get a hat, supporting the man Scarface, which I personally...
How do you feel about the timing on this?
I don't know.
Yeah, you do.
I don't know.
Yeah, you do.
Okay, yeah, it kind of stinks. Like, it feels weird.
It's weird.
It feels weird.
In the middle of the playoffs.
Although maybe I do wonder how much of this was already planned well ahead of time.
Like, and they then, thought they'd be playing still?
Yeah, and then I also think 30-year anniversary. I'm trying to recall. Is that one of Scarface's albums? I don't remember exactly what day.
It's just like, how many people are going to take time out of their day, drive to Minute Maid Park, and buy that hat today or this week?
I mean, I might.
Okay, not outside of you. like, it's fine. It's not like I'm not angry about it or anything. I'm just like, that's a weird. It's as weird now as it was when we saw the tease. Just weird. Just different. Timing wise.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. Today, the 30th anniversary of the release of the diary.
Okay.
Yeah. So, okay. The day is very particular to the release of this. So, okay. There you go. Timing is fine.
All
Lopez
right.
is just being a curmudgeon.
You do
in
you.
In your face. You hold that. Now, more rumor. And now we enter the reckless speculation
Yeah.
zone.
How about that?
And our friend Michael Schwab is the man who takes us to the reckless speculation zone because he tweeted out that, you know, he heard that Minute Maid would be taking their name off of Minute Maid Park, what has come to be known as the Juice Box there. And the additional rumor is that it would become Daikin Park for the next season and beyond. Daikin is the world's largest air conditioner manufacturer in Japan, HQ in Japan. And so hypothesizing it goes from the Juice Box to the Ice Box. And of course, I want to once more say, reckless speculation.
The Ice Box.
And the speculation is based off of, as Michael Schwab says, rumor that Minute Maid Park is coming off of Minute Maid, the name is coming off of Minute Maid Park. They had like a 30-year deal for
That's us. Where, yeah, thank you. I'm glad you brought that up. Not to be too skeptical, but I'm skeptical because, you know, who knows where he heard that. It goes to 2032.
Yeah.
The Astros contract with Minute Maid. I don't think Coca-Cola Corporation is missing payments.
I don't think so.
You know, I don't think there's like a contract issue or a payment issue. So it would have to be a pretty drastic change. You know, just internally,
right?
You know, to all of a sudden change from Minute Maid to Daikin.
When it comes to payments, I do wonder if, like, and this is now just again continuous reckless speculation. Mm-hmm. I wonder if, like, Coca-Cola as a company, are they pushing Minute Maid as a brand still in that way? Not saying that they don't have it, but is that something that they feel like they need to pay for marketing?
What's a
of?
Great relationship they've had, man.
Sure.
I mean, how much free publicity have they gotten in the last 7 years?
And that is absolutely the case. But yeah. I also then just wonder is like. Do they feel like that it continues to be necessary for this time period and with breaking that situation? Again, assuming that the rumor is true, that maybe that's the thought process behind it. But we'll ultimately see. I just thought that was really
I smell a lawsuit coming.
Okay.
I smell a lawsuit coming.
I mean, maybe, but yeah. I also wonder, like, you mentioned that it was...
Unless all parties are just in agreement.
Right, and this is the thing. You mentioned that it's a, you know, they had it till 32. It's also not a... it's a decent deal, but I wonder...
It's outdated, I'm sure.
Can you get significantly more money? Like, if them backing out might be not a blessing in disguise, but an opportunity to cash out even more for the Astros, if that's
maybe
not...
Maybe we should use the text board mantra that we often get when players hold out and such. They signed a contract, Reggie. They signed a contract.
Yeah, good luck enforcing it. It's often said that a contract is only as good as both sides want to enforce it, right?
And yeah, so exactly.
If one of these sides is like, I want out, and the other's like, all right, cool. Who cares? All right, some other things that are popping as we get this thing going. Virginia men's basketball coach Tony Bennett seemingly like retired abruptly after 18 years at Virginia. Obviously like a well-regarded guy, only 55 years of age. And before we even get into like what is happening with him retiring in this particular juncture, I want to ask you, what do you think of when you hear Tony Bennett at Virginia? Like, what is the first thing that comes to mind, or what are some of the first things that come to mind? Because I'm really interested on whether it's one thing or another.
It's two. National champion. And can't score a lick. They can't score.
Bingo.
they got run out in the tournament. What was it? They scored 42 points against Colorado State.
You didn't even get to the one that I thought about, which was, hey, you remember that one time that they were the first number one seed to be bounced from the tournament? But I do appreciate that you went to Tony Bennett as national champion, because I went to, you know, obviously I think of national champion, but I also think of the fact that, yeah, they can't score a lick, and they also went to that zone defense. Like, they're playing that zone defense that is a frustration to many people, particularly enjoyers of actual fun basketball. But you cannot deny how effective he has been as a head coach. And by and large, you know, his reputation is as a really good dude.
He's a great guy. By all accounts, by all my experience being around him at different points, that's what makes this so weird to me.
So weird.
It makes it so weird. Virginia, 2 weeks before the season starts?
Exactly. Virginia men's basketball tweets out Tony Bennett to announce his immediate retirement in a press conference Friday at 11, which obviously they're probably done with that now. But immediate retirement, as you mentioned, a few weeks before the season starts, does not seem like a man of what a man of his
stature. So unlike him.
He seems like he would be very principled in making sure that he handles this in a respectful way. And it really just raises the antenna as to, oh, what's happening there?
So I think, and you and I were talking about this before the show, it's so bizarre to me. First of all, this is not him. He doesn't do this. Well, he did, but I'm saying but with normal circumstances. First of all, he committed to and over the entire offseason kind of changed the offensive approach because of that bad offense that they have. So he's been working on this new offense and all this and bringing people in to help him. And then 2 weeks before the season starts, he retires. That's just not him. So there's something weird there. There's also something weird with all these people saying, well, it's the NIL, you know, ran off another coach, you know, because of the disaster or I guess, you know, lack of, you know, certain, you know, organization with the NIL. And all. That doesn't make sense either because he would have done that earlier. You know, if he would have just like burned out on that.
Yeah, that feels like something that has been relatively recent, not recent enough that it's this had to happen right this moment.
Exactly.
I don't want to recklessly speculate in this degree, but it's just like it feels like there's something else that we don't know that maybe we will never know and maybe that we don't need to know, right? Yeah. Like, it might not be any of our damn business. But yeah, this does not feel like just on the face of what we know. This makes sense.
Well, then the other thing is, it's not him. It's so out of character. It's silly to consider it the NIL for the timing to happen as it did. And then the third thing, people were speculating, you know, health. It's got to be health reasons or whatever. And they came right out and said, no, it's not health. It's absolutely not. Now, you know, take it for what it is, but it's not. So if it's not health, it's not him, and it's not the NIL, something strange is happening.
Well, all we know is that Tony Bennett retiring from University of Virginia men's basketball. That's another one. We're seeing like a real turnover of like the long-term, well-respected coaches in men's basketball. Like if I ask you who is the, you know, kind of face of college basketball from that coaching perspective
right now,
who do you point to?
I would say
Kay's gone, Boeheim's gone. You know, is Izzo still there? No, is Izzo gone at this point? I always forget him in Michigan State. You know, Cal is still in the game, at Arkansas.
I would say Cal. He's going to be interesting to watch. But you're right. I mean, there's a lot of them that are just out. I think obviously the you know, look at Villanova, you know, all
and
this.
Jay Wright leaves as well. Yeah. So, yeah, real interesting. Bill Self comes to mind on the YouTube. That's fair. Maybe you talk about like Mark Few, but Mark Few has come in and kind of at a different era after that. Mm-hmm. So it's just something I've thought about of like how, especially in college basketball, where the stars are no longer the players because they move around so much and that they turn over so quickly, that it has been about these coaches and that personality that they imbue to these teams, which one, we're not seeing as much personality imbued to teams anymore.
Yeah.
But then two, we're not seeing the names that we know. So like all of this becomes even more foreign for the average viewer, which is really interesting. 713 says it's Hurley and UConn by a mile. I'm not certain of that, but I understand what you're going from. UConn has definitely established itself.
Hurley's it.
A basketball.
I think Hurley's probably
okay.
it.
Okay. Yeah. Right. If you say so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I'm not entirely sold on it, but I'm not going to fight you on it. So. I'm not going to fight you on it. That is what's popping here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. Somebody said, and don't forget with Tony Bennett, he can sing. Not the same guy, but I appreciate that. I appreciate that. I believe that you're joking. I know that you're joking.
I love the way you look tonight.
All right.
Okay. Yeah.
Very good. All right. That's In the Loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Appreciate you hanging out with us. Coming up next, let's play a little game of what's more likely to happen. Let's kind of view some of the possibilities in this game versus the Packers. We'll do all of that next.